And good afternoon and welcome to Talk of the Rock. I'm your host, Jared Griffin, and it's Invasive Species Week. And invasive species is any living thing that's not native to a particular place and causes harm to the environment, economy, and or human health in the place that it's been introduced to. And despite our remote location, Kodiak and Alaska, we're confronted with a growing number of invasive species, and they are constantly on the move. So Governor Dunleavy declared the week of June 11th through June 17th, that's this week, Invasive Species Awareness Week, and acknowledging the work that is being done to keep Alaska wild and free of invasive species. And we have a couple of guests here today who are doing just that work. Joining me in the studio are Blythe Brown, the acting district manager of the Kodiak Soil and Water Conservation District, and Matt Van Dale, National Resources Director for the Shunek Tribe of Kodiak. Welcome, Blythe and Matt.
Hey, good evening. Thank or you. Afternoon,
right? Afternoon. Oh, my gosh.
I already got plans, clearly.
Well, let's start things off by talking about Invasive Species Week, or Invasive Species Awareness Week. Why do you think designating a week for this, why is that so important?
Actually, I think a week's not long enough. I think it's important, especially here in Alaska and in Kodiak, to make people aware of, first, what invasive species are, but the important fact that it's not too late to do something about them here in Alaska and in Kodiak.
Yeah, and especially, too, is that so much of this, we can't do it by ourselves. We have to have community involvement, community support, and the more outreach and education that we can do, both with just the threats of invasive species and what they'll do to our ecosystem, our economy, our subsistence resources, but the other thing, too, is making people aware that they can help us and empower them and give them tools to be able to assist us, because this isn't going to be something that we can accomplish in a vacuum. We need the entire community supporting us, because many hands make light work.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, and a big thank you to the Kodiak Island Borough for tagging on to the Alaska Declaration by the governor. The mayor of Kodiak Island Borough also declared this week to be Invasive Species Awareness Week.
So what's going on here in Kodiak? How are what are the invasive species you guys are facing right now that are kind of at the top of your list, and how are they affecting the native biodiversity and our ecosystems? Pick one. You can only pick one. I can see the calculating which one do I want to talk about first.
Of course, orange hawkweed is always big on Kodiak's mind. That's kind of what Kodiak is known for all across the country. They've talked about Kodiak and its orange hawkweed problems. Hmm. Matt's here with the crawdads, but I'm going to wait a little bit on that. I'm going to talk about orange hawkweed a little more first.
Yeah.
It was brought here in the mid-60s. It's all over Kodiak, Yuzinki, and Port Lions. But when I said it was not too late, it's not too late because it's not in Larson Bay, Karluk, Akiak. It's not on the top of Old Woman's. It's not on Kashaverov. It's not on Barometer, or at least the top of Barometer, but we have found it on the trail at the base of Barometer. So it's not too late to keep it in town, keep it in the concentrated areas, and do something about it.
So for those new to the island, maybe they just moved here, hawkweed's the beautiful little tiny orange weed.
Right. Because we've had such a cold, late spring here, it's not quite blooming yet. It often is blooming by now, and it will be blooming probably by the end of today with this warm sunshine out right now. It's soon all of Kodiak, like the bike path, is going to be all orange, lined in orange. So it is an orange flower. We do not have any native orange flowers like that.
And why is it so dangerous? Or dangerous to the natural biodiversity here? It's pretty. It's goes gangbusters when it.
it'll take over and replace all our native wildflowers and all our just not even just wildflowers. I've seen it stunt pushkey.
Wow, that's a statement. And Matt, on your side, the crawdads.
Yeah, well, it's exactly what Blythe was saying. It's not too late with the crayfish either. This is the only place in Alaska that there are crayfish of any species, and they're only in the Buskin. They have not invaded the entirety of Buskin Lake. There are wide swaths of suboptimal habitat that we don't find crayfish in. So they're still clustered in the areas that we would expect them to be because of prime habitat. They do not appear to have gone into the adjacent lakes that are part of the Buskin drainage. We've been collecting what's called environmental eDNA or eDNA, and that's the every, you know, like is a crayfish is breathing, for instance, there's interface in the water between the water and its gills, and it's shedding a little bit of DNA. It's kind of like, you know, if we were to sneeze in this room and they got an air sample, it could tell that there were three humans in it. But we've been getting eDNA samples at certain places along the river, and we are getting detections of crayfish, but it is not in high densities. And we're also wondering if some of this eDNA is actually just being washed farther downstream. So these are all very, very positive developments, and we've also got results from our dietary analysis back of what the crayfish are eating, and it appears that they are still detritivores. So they're just kind of eating bottom matter and everything, and it does not appear that they're seeking out very protein-rich food sources, which would be salmon fry, smolt, eggs, which is what's happened in other parts of the world. And so what we're thinking is that we're still in that golden hour of being able to suppress these to a point that they're not going to get a total claw hold and destroy the Buskin ecosystem, but it's going to take a lot of work. That's something that we call functional eradication. We're not going to be able to completely eradicate them, but we can at least figure out ways to suppress them to a point that it's not going to have as negative of impacts on the ecosystem of the fisheries that we were initially fearing.
So have talked about getting community involved, and over the past few weeks we've had guests on this show talking about the citizen scientists, one with the seabird mortality, with the PSP, what are your approaches to this idea that citizen scientists, getting citizens involved in helping keep these at bay?
Well, we've got a crayfish derby coming up on Saturday. Yep, noon to 3 out there at the Buskin. We're not advertising it as a boil, just because I will be very happily surprised if the weather cooperates. But if people do want to boil them themselves on site, they can bring the stuff. And, we got our permit from the state, which allows us to have citizen scientists helping us capture these. So as long as they're actually with us and they sign on as a volunteer, they're going to be able to help out with community derbies like this.
And there's been I've heard just a few different things. Can you kind of clarify, like, what are the rules about collecting crayfish?
Currently, the rules remain unchanged, because what I heard is the governor has not signed the new regulation yet, which would allow people to go catch them themselves and kill them on site to eat them. But from what I have heard, that has not been signed yet.
Okay.
It's still on the governor's desk.
But you can still just go out there, grab them. No nets, no traps.
If you're with us, you can do that.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, we typically use a little hand net.
Okay.
And a hand and a hand net, and if you can't grab by your hand, you just scare it into your hand net.
Okay.
Yep.
And then you really can't do that with hawkweed. Hawkweed, you have to kill on site. How are some of the safe ways that we can do that?
Well, actually, getting back to the citizen scientists is and more eyes on the ground. Just like with the crawdads, if you're walking the lower Buskin River and find a crawdad, Matt can tell you what to do with it. You can't remove it away from the river.
Yeah, if you find one somewhere, kill it. Take a picture of both the backside so that we can tell if it's an adult or a juvenile, and the underside so we can tell if it's a male or a female. and then just send it to us, report it to ACISP.
And then if you find orange hawkweed down there along the buskin, report it to the Kodiak Soil and Water Conservation District. We can, depending on what the situation is, we can go out and assess it and find out how much there really is and what the proper treatment method would be. Sometimes you can dig them out if you find just like one plant. Last year somebody found one orange hawkweed plant on the side of North Sister. So all these hikers that are out there, everybody with boots on the ground, if you find an orange hawkweed anywhere, please report it to us. Even if you do try to remove it yourself, try get us a GPS point, get us a photo where we can see it in context, not just a close-up of another orange hawkweed flower. Like the North Sister one, the photo we received showed, if I remember right, I think you can see the dump from the where the ridge is. And that gives us the ability to go back to that location and find out if there's more in the area that just wasn't seen by that person. And we can assess the situation and how much is there. Also, you need to report to the landowner. So report to the Kodiak Soil and Water Conservation District and report to the landowner, because landowners need to become aware of what's on their property and responsible for management of their property.
Sorry, I just keep coughing.
It's the pollen.
Maybe. Oh, gosh. Yeah. Well, and with hawkweed, right, you shouldn't just uproot it. Right.
No, because if you leave the roots and it's probably got the little rhizomes and runners mm-hmm. and stuff already, as soon as, I believe that as soon as it germinates, it probably is already spreading.
Sure.
It's a pretty amazing plant. So yeah, don't just pull it up. And even if you pull the flower head, that encourages more plant growth. Mm. So it's good in your own lawn if you don't want to use herbicides or it's just so much that you just can't do anything about it. At least mow it and get the heads off,
mm-hmm.
And that'll keep the seeds from spreading.
Okay.
So if you pick the buds, pick the flowers, contain those in Ziploc bags or in some sort of a bag so that they don't go poof like dandelions to float all over the place.
Right.
But what you're doing is you're encouraging plant growth. So that's not going to kill the plant at all by taking the flower heads, even though it is good to take the flower heads, as I say, for seed dispersal.
Matt, you mentioned ACISP, which is the Alaska Invasive Species Partnership. How does that work? Who's involved with ACISP? And
it's a suite of people. Blythe, you want to take that question?
It's anybody and everybody in the state of Alaska that wants to be involved with invasive species. In fact, many of you are probably familiar with the plant Canada thistle. The ACISP group also partners with our neighbors, and Canada thistle is not from Canada, so we're trying to change the name to creeping thistle, trying to get people to use creeping. But it used to be called SNPM, Committee for Noxious and Invasive Plants Management, and then it was Pest Management, and now ACISP tries to incorporate everybody all together. We have a monthly meeting by Zoom, and then once a year there's a gathering. It moves around the state. This coming year, it'll be November. I don't have the date
like
right here in front of me.
3rd through 5th, I think, maybe, of November.
November 3rd through 5th,
something
that sounds
like that.
Right.
Yeah,
the first week of November. It'll be in Sitka this year. And we did have it in Kodiak 2012, I think it was in Kodiak, so it probably won't come back soon, but it'd be awesome to have it back again. It's anybody that can show up in person. Ever since COVID, we've also had it by Zoom and in person.
Hmm. So how do like climate change and other environmental factors influence the spread and the impact of invasive species?
Well, one of the things that we're really concerned about with crayfish is just the variability and the fragile nature of the sockeye returning to the buskin system. And so if we start to get into a situation where just the environmental factors are already putting one more stressor on the young salmon and potentially swaying to being much more conducive for crayfish survival, and it's just going to end up being like this cycle of more stressors added on the salmon, crayfish doing better, more stressors added on the salmon, crayfish doing better, and it's just going to tip everything. And including, even though the crayfish appear to be detritivores right now, that is traditionally what's happened in other parts of the world. That's the first thing that they start to collapse when they come into a new system, is just the very base levels of the food web in the ecosystem, and then it goes from there. Then once they eat themselves out of house and home, that's when they start going after fish eggs. And, you know, for instance, when I say that, you know, it's not too late, we're going to try to go for functional eradication, that's going to take a lot of work. Mm-hmm. We got over 6,000 crayfish out last year. We're aiming for 10,000 this year.
Sounds like
and
a lot.
So, yeah, it's going to be a lot. It's going to be a lot. But that's what it takes. Once we get away from the early detection and rapid response part of invasive species, and you have to start getting into a suppression phase, it just jumps orders of magnitude in terms of time involved, resources required, money, and that's why it's like it's better to not even have them here in the first place,
sure,
so that we don't get into this situation. Because another thing we've got to figure out is how is it going to be fiscally viable and responsible to continue suppressing these crayfish, because it's going to take a lot of money and time and man and human power to deal with this. So we need to figure out, that's why I really want to get the community involvement back.
If you're talking climate change and plants, some of the plants introduced to Kodiak by well-meaning gardeners, but you know, you don't realize what you're bringing in. It's exactly how orange hawkweed was brought in. Some of these plants that people say, oh, it's a little aggressive in my garden, but it's not doing anything. Just watch them and control your aggressive garden plants, and don't bring in something that's a problem somewhere else. Because with climate change, if our climate gets a little bit warmer, maybe some of those plants will survive. Such as Himalayan blackberry. Anybody, are you guys familiar with the Himalayan blackberry in the Pacific Northwest? It strangles everything. It tastes delicious, but it strangles everything, and we don't want it to survive here. It might just take a couple of degrees of average warming over the year, and it might survive. I have seen one Himalayan blackberry vine survive several years, but it was in a protected root ball next to a building. So it won't take much to let some of these other species survive.
What are some other invasive species? We talk about hawkweed and crayfish. Those are the big ones on everybody's mind, you know, over the course of the summer. And Homer's dealing with a little possum invasion right now. But what are you seeing kind of on the horizon? Some things we should be watching out for.
Green crabs might be on their way.
Yeah.
And they were found in Alaska for the first time last year, down in Metlakatla. Previous to that, they were just Vancouver Island was the furthest north that they had been found. The Prince William Sound RCAC has an intern here in Kodiak. He sampled four green crabs last year, and he's doing it again this year, Noah Schwaff. So hopefully if we get traps out and surveys out, we'll find them before they become, you know, maybe we'll find that EDRR, that's early detection rapid response, catch the first ones that come in, catch the first plant that comes in, catch the first blackberry and get rid of it. We did for the blackberry.
What kind of threat do the green crabs pose?
They effectively outcompete dungies.
Okay.
They have a very similar niche, but they're wildly successful at outcompeting dungies, destroying eelgrass beds. Yeah, it's pretty nasty stuff.
So here in Kodiak, we've got the Kodiak Soil and Water Conservation District has a crew doing terrestrial plant surveys. We've got some aquatic plant surveys. Elodia is an aquatic plant that's a problem in several waterways around Alaska. We have not found it here in Kodiak yet. Shunek Tribe of Kodiak is working on the crayfish. I keep wanting to call them crawdads.
Oh, that's okay. I know what you mean.
I know, yeah.
Noah Schroff with the Prince William Sound RCAC is doing the green crab surveys. And hopefully we'd like to train people on how to just tell the difference between green crab shells and other native crab shells. And then if you're walking the beaches, you can help report them. Hmm. And Julie Matwiyu with the Marine Advisory Program she has some tunicate plates in the harbor, watching for some of the aquatic tunicates that could come in.
So that's on the citizen and community side. What is there like in terms of policy or government efforts that that can be implemented to combat invasive mm-hmm. species?
Oh, we're gonna be reintroducing our proposal to the Board of Fisheries later this summer, which would open public harvest back up.
Okay.
Yeah, then help us out. But that's one of the big things. We just we need more tools in the toolbox, mm-hmm. basically.
Didn't know you were gonna ask that question. I'm not ready to report on it yet right now. At the state level, we've been trying for years and years to get an invasive species council, an advisory council for the governor, established, and I think he signed. I won't say because I don't know the actual status of that now, but we're trying to get a statewide council going. In other states, their invasive species lists can be adjusted. You can add species and take species off as their status changes. In Alaska, our invasive species list is a agricultural seed list. So you're not supposed to bring in such as creeping thistle seed, or there's several seeds on the list. But there's nothing that says you can't grow it in your yard here. Down in Washington, you're not allowed to grow some of those in your yard. If you have it, you have to try to get rid of it. And that would help us a lot here in Alaska if we had a few more regulations and a usable invasive species list that we could work with.
So what are some of the key research gaps or areas that that really require further study in some of these species?
I got a good one for you. It's all about crayfish again.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
One of the main things that we're going to be focusing on this year is a habitat suitability index, both within the buscan and, so that way we can kind of get a better idea about how many other areas these crayfish may invade within the drainage. And one of the big things that we really need to figure out is population information. You know, age, class, recruitment, survival, all of the basic things that Fish and Game have for crab species, for instance. We want to try to figure out how we can do that with the crayfish so that we can start modeling what we expect the population to be doing, and then we'll have another little needle that's going to be showing us, are they stable, increasing, or decreasing? And so those are two of the big goals that we have this year going forward.
On the plant front, actually, I was just talking with my assistant, Masumi, this morning about pollinator impacts. Katie Spellman up in the Fairbanks area has done some research with the invasive species that they have, white sweet clover and berry pollinators. But we don't know a lot about what our pollinators here are doing and what's going to the orange hawkweed instead of the native blueberries, maybe. We don't know.
Interesting.
So I don't know if we really want to, funding and time and everything is short. Yeah. So do we have time to do that? But it is a question that as some of these plants get out of hand and if we can't mm-hmm. catch them, what will happen here?
All right. So is there any good news? Or is it just being watchful?
Well, on the plant front, the good news is, as I already said, we don't have orange hawkweed in Akiak, Karlik, Larsen Bay, on top of Kashevarov, in a lot of places we don't have orange hawkweed, so it's not too late. We don't have a lot of plants when you start looking at the big list of invasive species in Western Washington. Western Washington is close enough to our temperatures, habitats, and transportation mm-hmm. systems that anything in Western Washington could show up here in Kodiak, but we still don't have a lot of what they have. So it's not too late.
Yeah, and the good news from my side is I just looked at the weather, and it looks like it might be sunny on Saturday for the crayfish derby. Okay. Imagine that. Looks like it might be a little bit windy, though, which means that we can just focus on the mud bugs and not the bugs that are trying to suck our blood, so yep. That'll also be nice.
go ahead.
Don't have anything else. Oh, okay. Yep.
Mm-hmm. All right, so what is... we got a couple minutes left, so let's kind of talk about the future. How do you see the future of invasive species management evolving here in Kodiak? Like, what are your key priorities moving forward?
Early detection, rapid response, once again, trying to get some of the... treat it like a wildfire for orange... Going back to orange hawkweed, we mm-hmm. always come back to orange hawkweed. Treat it like a wildfire, keep it contained within town. Put out the little sparks and little bonfires that are happening outside of town. And realize that you have to have all of your management methods. You have to be allowed to use herbicides and manual control. Keep your toolbox full of everything and look at the whole big picture.
Anyhow, I agree completely. I mean, same thing with the crayfish. Contain it, suppress it, put out the little sparks, catch them as small as you can catch them. Like, you got to get the whole range, because if you just go after the adults, those are the prime predator of other crayfish, especially smaller crayfish are the adults. So,
oh.
Yeah. Yep. So, get them all.
Get them all. That was a very helpful metaphor. Think of it like a wildfire. Mm-hmm. That works. Well, I think we're just about out of time, so thank you, Blythe Brown, Acting District Manager from the Kodiak Soil and Water Conservation District, and Matt Vandale, Natural Resource Director for Shunack Tribe of Kodiak. Thanks so much for coming to talk about Invasive Species Awareness Week and what we can do here in Kodiak to dampen down the wildfires.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Jerry.